Chapter 31. Death Against Death. The Dakun sailed the skies above the Kadrin Plains, her sails tattered and blackened, the rigging repaired by inexpert hands. They had sailed around Garsley, leaving it to the advance of the ground forces that Jinzan's apprentices were massing back in Wiselton. Jinzan had grander plans for a richer target. The countryside that ran below them was fields as far as the horizon in both directions, crisscrossed by roads and dotted with farmhouses. The landscape switched from green to golden to brown and back again as the crops shifted, all pale and washed bleak in the starlight. The Kadrin ship had plenty of maps aboard. The landward maps were not as precise as the nautical charts Jinzan was accustomed to. He knew how to plot a heading, be it in air or sea, but there were no maps of air currents, and no matter how careful the plan, that unknown loomed over him. Jinzan's raids had come mainly in daylight hours, purely by mischance. If his course flew true, Whitefield would feel his wrath in darkness. Jinzan paced the decks, his sleepless habits giving no rest to his weary mind. Twice since they had begun their raids, he had tried to sleep, despite Aeolin's objections. She found the thought unbecoming of a grand necromancer. It was an easy judgment for her to make. She was not the one who had been left wondering about the fate of a Telluraki twin, unseen for countless days. Jinzan's awareness of Denric had gone dim. His thoughts did not sit quiet enough in his skull to allow him to relax and view Tellurak with waking eyes. His memory of Denric's recent exploits was muddied as well. He could not separate out anything as being distinctly recent. Activities on the ship, the Katamic Sea, all things he had done most of his life. His restless mind had needed ideas, punched them, twisted them into shapes. He had a sheaf of notes for how he would prepare his trap. It was likely that the demon would rush to the aid of a city that could call for aid by speaking stone. He had to be prepared for the eventuality. The sky was lightening off the port side of the ship. Jinzan swore. What sort of necromancer bides his days in daylight hours alone?
Morning impends, master, Aeolin informed him, rubbing the wound raw.
Jinzan glared at her, stopping any further remark on the subject. An odd line stood out from the fields ahead of them. Jinzan watched and waited as the Dakun drew him closer to it.
An aqueduct.
It was the sign he had been waiting for. All the aqueducts of the central plains ran from the Wellspire in Whitefield. They served only a small portion of the endless expanse of arable land and ran for less than a day's ride.
We might make it with darkness to spare at last.
They rose higher in the sky on Jinzan's command. He had a destination in mind, but no clear map of the city to find it by. The aerial view of Whitefield would have to be his map, bereft of annotation. The city wall appeared in the distance, a lone, flat ring on the plains, amid a sea of farmland. They flew above, not stopping at the nearest defensive post as they usually did. Instead, Jinzan searched the pre-dawn streets for a building he knew would be there. Every academy student had to memorize the cities that had speaking stones, and the Kadrin Empire was not wont to place them in hovels or public squares. Whitefield separated itself into a grid of sorts, or perhaps more like a spider's web. The city walls ran in concentric circles, growth rings, a sign of the city's humble origins and its rise. At the very center stood the well spire, rising higher than the city walls and feeding the aqueducts that radiated out in all directions, spreading water to the city and beyond. Jinzan looked through one section, then the next. No building in the city separated itself readily from the rest. They looped around, thankful to the deserted streets that no general alarm had yet been raised. For a city its size, Whitefield was spread thin. Trees and fields and even small farms dwelt snugly in its confines. There were houses and shops, taverns and plazas, workshops and stables. There was nothing that screamed out its importance beyond a few overfed manor houses in the Wellspire itself.
The Wellspire, of course!
Jinzan shook his head at his own sluggish thinking
and ordered the Dakun to the heart of the city. They followed one of the aqueducts, racing against the peaking sun that threatened to wake the populace at any moment. Drawing closer, he saw the terraces, the balconies, the windows. It was the center of the city in more than just geography.
"Bring us alongside. Ready the grapples. Prepare to board,"
Jinzan rasped. He caught a smirk on Aeolin's face and purged it with a glare. Jinzan had picked a balcony at random, figuring that any assault on the upper floors would be quicker than entering through the main gates. The dead crew threw grapples, struggling even to hit the balcony railing on a stationary building. After a few tries apiece, enough of the grapples caught for the Dakun to be hauled up next to the well spire. Jinzan winced, watching as the yardarms were caught against the outer walls of the spire as the ship was pulled in. There was scraping and scratching of wood on stone, and a cracking at last as the sails were forced askew. Jinzan's crew leapt the railings with more enthusiasm than grace. They spread into the halls of the well spire, searching for the speaking stone. Jinzan followed gingerly. His apprentices seemed sufficient to subdue whatever resistance they might find, and the dead were all linked to his mind, capable of reporting the speaking stone's discovery. There was no need for Jinzan to rush just yet, and he took great care with the notes he brought along with him.
"Varnus, I thought you would be seeing to the arrangements for the security of the wedding, or at least be getting harried by the nobles over every little detail of your plan,"
Kyra said. He was having tea with a few of those nobles himself, and they were the sort who would bristle and brood, never mentioning Kyra's casual attire, but bearing it as a mark against him for generations.
"I don't ask often. I know you're a busy man. But, if you wouldn't mind, I could use a moment with you," Varnus requested.
He looked as sheepish as Kyrus could ever recall seeing him, staring at the floor, shoulders slumped.
"Of course," Kyrus replied, "if you'll excuse us."
Kyrus stood from the table, glad to be free of the tedium that Seeley had foisted upon him by introducing him to a gaggle of wedding guests. Kyrus had retaliated by studiously not listening to their names. There were objections, of course, strong ones. A dowager sniffed and turned her head from him. Some backwater lord gave him a sound harumphing. The palace was overflowing with people. In the halls, it was mostly servants. In the rooms, mainly guests for the wedding. There was scant room for a quiet conversation anywhere. Kyrus chose the option that proved the least likely to intersect with celebratory preparations and led them down to the dungeons. Though in some disrepair, the dungeons were kept tidy under Rashan's watch. He was ill-inclined to keep many prisoners around, preferring either amnesty or execution to confining men for ages on end in darkness and squalor. Kyra shooed a jailer out of the watchroom and took it over for himself and Varnus.
"What is it that cannot wait?" Kyrus asked.
He leaned against the jailer's little table, set with bread and ale for a midday meal.
"I'm dead," Varnus said, shaking his head.
"What?" Kyrus exclaimed. "What happened?"
"It was a couple of nights ago. I lose track so easy now. Kidnappers came in the night. All a blur. I got my sword out, but I'd been asleep, and the fella knew his blade work," Varnus said.
The guard captain slumped against the wall.
"Who killed you? Why did you not tell me sooner?" Kyrus asked. "What of Phaelin's twin and the boy?"
"Phaelin told me not to tell you. Said you had enough worries for now. But he's been asking more and more weird questions lately. I caught him working magic on the boy. Been thinking, not a lot else to do lying in bed these nights. I'm wondering if maybe Phaelin got rid of me. He'd wanted me gone, made no secret of it. But I stayed to keep him safe," Varnus said.
He glanced down at the jailer's desk and grabbed a mug of ale. Varnus downed it in a long gulp.
"Think he might still be working for Rashan."
"After the disaster with the staff of Galen?" Kyrus said, putting a hand to his chin. "I would be surprised, to say the least. Rashan might not kill him for failure, but trust him again so soon? That seems unlikely."
"But the questions," Varnus said.
He put a hand on Kairos's shoulder, leaned his face in close.
He got me thinking maybe you were up to some plot to kill Rashaan. He never out and said it, but I can see where a dog's nose is pointing.
Kairos felt a chill, though the air in the dungeon was cloyingly warm.
Where can I find Phelan? I think I should have a word with him, Kairos said.
I don't find him. I just let it drop that I'm looking and he finds me, Varnas replied with a shrug.
Ah, very well. In that case,
Kairos finished his thought with a spell. The room and a bit of the corridor around it were shielded in.
Show yourself, Phelan.
Yes.
You can see I have you trapped in with us. I give you a chance to explain your way out of this before I set fire to everything within my shield.
How do you know he's... Varnas began, but stopped short, his head pulled back.
Phelan faded into view, a knife to Varnas's throat. It was neither a warrior's last resort, nor a sneak's tool, nor even a kitchen implement. It looked like a letter opener gone sharp, but a droplet of blood welling at the tip told that it was enough to do its job.
Varnas struggled, but Phelan pulled the knife tighter against his flesh.
Hold still, you oaf, or I'll kill you by accident. Brennus, I demand to see the warlock.
Kairos said nothing. He regarded Phelan with much the same look that he had seen on the faces of the Society of Learned Men professors, studying an entomological specimen pinned to a display board.
Brennus, do something, Varnas pleaded.
No, Kairos told them both.
You are the subject of the Empire, Phelan said. Any demand to see Warlock Rashaan must be honored.
I think you shall find that many of the rules the Warlock set have difficulty laying hand upon me, Kairos returned.
If you would explain yourself, first release Varnas.
They got me too,
Phelan said, still keeping tight hold of Varnas with his blade.
It was Tanner, and he had Stalyart with him. They got the boy back for Zane.
Any of that sound true, Varnas? Kairos asked.
It wasn't Tanner. Even drunk, I'd know his blade work anywhere.
It was Stalyart that killed you, you ale-soaked buffoon, Phelan shouted. Some protector you turned out to be.
Phelan, now let Varnas go, Kairos said.
I want you to swear first.
Kairos lost patience with the ruse. He twisted knife and wrist himself, prying Phelan away from his hostage. Phelan cried out in pain, dropping the knife before Kairos released him. Phelan collapsed, seated to the floor, leaning on the wall for support and cradling a broken wrist. Kairos had not had to move a muscle.
Care to start that sentence again? Kairos asked.
When no response was forthcoming, he persisted.
What of Varnas's claim that you are spying for Rashaan? What is the warlock seeking from me?
He's just concerned about your well-being, Phelan said. You have so much responsibility.
Piss in the wind, Varnas said. He wasn't asking after your health. He wanted to know what you've been studying, what we talked about behind wards and doors.
Care for one last try? Kairos asked.
Phelan faded, melted and flowed.
The image of the effete illusionist was replaced
by the form of the demon warlock.
Phelan is not the only one versed in illusion, Kairos. You should have known better, Rashaan said.
I am disappointed in you.
Caladhras was never so easily...
Rashaan's voice cut short. His eyes bulged and darted about madly. Kairos smirked at him.
Come on, Rashaan. I should not be that easy to hold you fast. If you really are Rashaan, Kairos said. In fact, I think I have an idea to make sure.
What are you thinking, Brennus? Varnas said, grabbing him by the arm. What if this really is Rashaan?
I would not put the ruse past him, but Rashaan was careful to avoid ever learning my real name. He did not want to be able to slip, and knowing that the real Brennus was on the other side was all the knowledge he really needed anyway, Kairos explained.
But I intend to see if he can escape from one of the warded cells.
We are in the dungeons already, so it's the first test that comes to mind.
Kairos felt Phelan struggle, both for freedom and for breath.
Oh, demons have no need for breath either, as I recall.
Perhaps I should just wait a moment and see whether you pass out, Kairos said.
Fine, Brennus, it's Phelan after all.
What are you trying to prove? Varnas asked.
You said you think you might have arranged your death, Kyra said. Varnas gave a tiny nod, eyes grim. We know he has kidnapped a twin-born boy in both worlds and tried to take him for his own. You said he's been spying on me for Rashaan, which he has so artfully refuted. Iris indicated the false Rashaan before them. And not 2 moments ago, he had a knife to your throat. What am I trying to prove? Nothing but that he belongs in one of those cells regardless. Go on back to your duties. I am truly sorry for the loss of Zelasan. I will tell Soria. Kyrus clapped the burly guard captain on the shoulder and sent him on his way. Varnas's shoulders still slumped as he departed the dungeons, but he held his head a bit higher. As for you, Kyrus took Phelan in tow, allowing him just enough leeway to breathe. The warded cells were one level lower, and Kyrus said not another word on the way down. The corridor looked just as Kyrus had remembered it from his last venture down. There was a furrow across from where a cell once was that turned into a hole across the way. One he had made himself to escape from one of those same cells. The doors of the remaining cells were all ajar. Kyrus picked the last one of the line and dumped Phelan inside. He reverted back to his own form, looking up at Kyrus from hands and knees. When Rashaan comes for me, I'll tell him about all this, Phelan warned. Don't leave me in here. Kyrus glared down at the illusionist.
Liar. Kidnapper. Spy. He threatened Varnas's life to worm his way free. Probably killed him in Tellurak.
Tell Rashaan? I think not, Kyrus said. With a sharp tug, Phelan's source was emptied of its ether. The little bit was nothing to the yawning maw of Kyrus's own source, just a morsel to be tucked away. Kyrus guided the body as it fell, draping it against the inside of the door as he closed it. When Kyrus activated the cell, the deed was complete. Anyone who came and found Phelan would assume the cell had emptied his source.
Rashaan suspects but is not certain. Perhaps this buys another day or more. If nothing else, I shall cast one fewer shadow where I go.
The double doors of the dining hall burst open, and a sixth circle stumbled through. Every head present turned at the sound. The messenger had a scrap of paper in hand and his head swiveled about, eyes searching the room.
Warlock Rashaan, the sorcerer called out.
Quiet, lad, Fenris scolded. We are in the middle of an important...
What is it? Rashaan interrupted. The table of sketched security arrangements for the wedding was scratched gladly from his memory by the prospect of something more exciting, which included anything not related to festival planning.
Warlock, can this wait? We need to be certain of our plans, considering the last wedding we had, Celia said.
Half the inner circle was gathered, along with several of the guard captains of the various noble houses attending. Give it here, Sorcerer Kirkin, Rashaan said,
meeting the sixth circle sorcerer halfway.
Hand extended to receive the note. They've breached Wellspring, holding at third floor. Send aid.
Inner circle, follow me to the gardens, Rashaan ordered. Now!
The dining hall was only separated from the gardens by a wall of large glass doors and a terrace. Rashaan was already halfway to those doors before the first of his inner circle rose from their seats.
What's going on? Aloysia demanded,
following nonetheless.
Whitefield is under attack this very moment, Rashaan called back, not slowing.
He thrust open the doors and jogged across the terrace to the grassy lawn, then turned. He did not wait for everyone to catch up or catch their breath, but began explaining.
I'm going there now via transference. Any volunteers to join me?
Silence.
I thought not. Instead, I order you to stand your ground, ready to receive whatever comes back. I will try to keep yet another stone out of Magrin's hands, Rashaan said.
What do you think might...
Fenris began asking, but abandoned his question by the roadside as Rashaan was already enveloped in a sphere of ether. The sphere of his transference spell vanished, leaving him in a chamber of yellowed marble with a circle of well-tended lawn in its center. Rashaan had time to register that, and no more,
as runes carved all about the walls erupted in lances of ice. He was stabbed through a dozen times, even after the first several had wasted themselves against his shields. No blood poured from those wounds, of course, but Roshan was aware of the chill that seeped in. His muscles slowed, and rime encrusted him, spreading over the whole of his body. The ceiling of the chamber was rent asunder, and a cascade of water poured over him, freezing as it touched. In seconds, he was encased in a slovenly prison of ice, resembling nothing so much as a splash suspended in time. Jinzan rushed into the speaking stone chamber, amazed at the calmness he felt despite victory being so close at hand. His hands did not shake, nor did his heart race. Truly, he had gained mastery over his physical body. His trap had worked perfectly. The demon Roshan Solaran was impaled and frozen solid. Jinzan took the staff of Galen in both hands and pressed the squared wings of the head against the icy prison. Jinzan commanded it to draw, to crush the living source from the demon, from just a hand's breadth of ice away. He felt a cyclone of ether whirling into him, filling the staff, but none came from the demon. Even grasped by ice and held immobile, those demon eyes seemed to taunt him. Jinzan paused, realizing he was drawing nothing but whiffs of ether. All that had been readily at hand he had taken already. He knew he needed some other plan. Lorimar's technique for removing a source was not working on Roshan Solaran.
Hakvi Golatanu Dexjahai Ekalamu, Jinzan whispered,
mindful that the demon had reacted to his spells by their sound once before. He cupped his hands together, holding the staff of Galen in the crook of his arm. Between his hands, an orb of swirling energy formed. It grew, and Jinzan forced more and more ether into it. The more tightly he restrained it, the more powerful it became. It grew only when he was unable to contain it in a smaller vessel, and grow it did. When the sphere became wide as his own chest, he unleashed it. It flew toward the icy prison where Roshan Solaran was no longer trapped. The orb tore through the empty prison and the far wall of the speaking stone chamber, annihilating all in its path. Jinzan shrieked in rage as the demon resumed his corporeal form, a pace from where the orb had passed. That shriek, a pained, wheezing hiss, died quickly upon the realization that the demon was drawing his sword.
"Well, it looks like I was expected," Roshan quipped.
The demon bore an insouciant smile, mocking the gravity of their encounter. Jinzan tried once more, free of the barrier of ice that separated them, to extract the demon's source. The staff of Galen gave every sign of compliance, but delivered no result. It shook in his hand from the effort. Roshan just clucked his tongue and watched.
"Bite into an apple and you might suck its juices dry.
But you bite into stone, Counselor Fayer, and you merely break teeth. I know a man once, long ago, who thought like you did."
"Lorimar," Jinzan furnished the name. "I am his heir."
His mind struggled to form a plan while the demon parleyed. If there was to be an advantage gained, it would be from the demon's own hubris. He took a single step back, and Roshan did not follow.
"Lorimar may have been many things, but a father, I think not," Roshan joked. "As you may have surmised, I am here for that staff, which you have no rightful claim to."
"And to kill me, no doubt," Jinzan offered, hoping to draw a soliloquy from his adversary.
He kept a slow and steady draw, hoping to keep below the demon's threshold for alarm.
"Kill you? Kill you? My dear Counselor Fayer, I cannot kill you if I wanted to. You are already dead."
Roshan spoke the last in the tone of an elder, trying to scare small children with fireside stories. Jinzan was not amused.
"You think yourself amusing, demon?"
"I do," Roshan chuckled.
"I am master of death, grand necromancer, student of Lorimar's works," Jinzan proclaimed.
"And dead as soon as you run out of ether," Roshan replied. "You are a student of a select set of Lorimar's works,
My nephew told me of them. You were meant to find the tomb. Not you specifically, but whatever ambitious would-be necromancer came along. All Lorimar's works were destroyed, save a scant few. Enough to lead some great threat to the Kadrid Empire down a path of doom instead. I imagine that without that staff, you might have expired fully already.
You need more plausible lies, demon, Jinzan said. I am my source, my body a mere vessel.
Ah, Lorimar's philosophy boiled down to a novice's understanding, Roshan observed. The demon took a step in his direction, a casual step, but carrying the weight of threat by reputation. There was no unthreatening action for an avowed foe of Roshan Solaran. Jinzan took a step back to match, but found the demon's advance continued. He kept backing away. And you know, I pay you the respect of name and title. You call me demon. Even Lorimar had better manners. Roshan leapt for Jinzan, catching him unawares, despite having seen the sudden change in his demeanor in battle once before. Heaven's Cry slammed against Jinzan's shielding magic. Once, twice, a dozen times. Jinzan drew more ether in to reinforce it, but knew that it was not a plan for a long engagement. He thrust out his hand and shot from it a bolt of pure ether. Roshan was thrown to the wall, narrowly missing the doorway to the ruined speaking stone chamber. He crumbled to the ground, Heaven's Cry clattering free of his hand. He gave a feeble effort to rise and collapsed once more.
This is the end of you, demon. Here, today. Just as it is for those back in Kadrus, helpless without you there to defend them from my apprentices, and the dead they created from your sorcerers who guarded this place, Jinzan boasted.
Jinzan approached slowly, wary of the demon's tricks. He shot another bolt of ether, and the body splayed against the wall, back broken and twisted. Jinzan allowed himself a smile.
Best destroy him entirely. Let those who wish to claim he still lives be the ones to offer proof.
Jinzan nodded to himself. He stood above the body, marveling at how such a small creature could have been the cause of such misery and destruction. The youthful face was still twisted up in malevolent glee, eyes manic, staring blankly. It was poetry itself that the teachings of a long-dead nemesis were the key to his undoing. Without Lorimar's aid, Jinzan would never have had the strength of body to withstand the forces his mind could channel. He never would have had the fortitude to stand up to all the hardship of endless days and nights of study, to defend the last of the Magrin Alliance while there was something left to save.
Halatu, Dunaxi, Tukaso, Jinzan began,
but a twitch and a twist shattered his concentration. Roshan's body snapped around, the broken spine realigning itself as Roshan lunged for the staff of Galen. Roshan only got one hand around it, but that was enough. Jinzan flailed about, seeking to dislodge the demon. Roshan Solaran was ferociously strong, but light enough that even Jinzan could thrash him about like a game hare. Jinzan loosed another bolt of ether, but a shield sprang into existence around his foe just in time to absorb its impact. Jinzan began to panic, mind abuzz with conflicting thoughts of what to do next. You rely too much on a few simple tricks, Roshan observed, still clinging stubbornly to the staff. Jinzan continued to swing him about, battering the demon into walls and off the marble floor. That trap was a stroke of brilliance, but you had nothing to fall back on when it was not enough on its own.
Shut up, monster, Jinzan snarled.
Make me corpse, Roshan countered. Jinzan reached out with a spell of telekinesis and tore two door-sized chunks from the walls. He brought them together to crush the demon in between. As he had once before, Roshan turned himself incorporeal just before impact. Incorporeal hands cannot grasp. Jinzan had the staff free once more and began drawing ether for a renewed assault. Roshan reached out behind him and his sword leapt into his hand. Well done! Much better plan, Roshan said, giving a slight bow.
You think this is a game? Jinzan asked.
You think it not? Roshan retorted. Play at chess and wonder at what those pieces represent. It is a war. This,
all this about us, rendered in miniature. But this is the true game. Unlike chess, these sides are not equal. You are nothing but an obstacle, not a threat.
So you think, Jinzan replied.
He raised the staff of Galen, prepared to unleash a spell from ether stored within. Roshan was quicker. He raised a hand and a shock of lightning arced between the two men. Jinzan bore the brunt with his shielding spell, but was lifted off his feet and thrown the length of the corridor. The corridor ended in a T intersection. Jinzan was driven clear through the wall, making it an X. Jinzan had broken ribs. He knew this in the manner of a physician examining a patient, not as one feeling the sensation of pain. His shielding spell was worn eggshell thin, but that was a secondary concern. The first was free fall. The corridor had turned because the well spire ended there, and Jinzan had been blasted out into the city beyond. He fell not far, but splashed into one of the aqueducts that ran from the well spire. He bumped against the bottom of the channel and bobbed back to the surface, swept along by chest-deep waters. Jinzan craned his neck and saw that Roshan Solaran was standing in the hole through which he had been jettisoned. Knowing that he had little time to prepare himself, Jinzan struggled to get his feet beneath him. The current flowed at a walking pace, and Jinzan found he could hold himself against it, once he stopped himself being carried along and found firm footing. Roshan hopped down from the well spire, falling two stories to land deftly upon the side wall of the aqueduct. He scurried along the maintenance walkway, comfortably wide enough to keep thoughts of an error of balance or a gust of wind out of Jinzan's hopes. Jinzan instead tried to create his own misfortune for the demon. A simple telekinetic shove was all it should have taken, but Jinzan found that the demon's source was too slick to keep a hold on. In trying, he lost valuable time, all the while the demon closing in. "I think I owe you this," Roshan called out, still well out of the range where that wicked sword of his could be brought to bear. The water around Jinzan hardened in an instant, forming a block of ice that encased him like a tomb from the chest down. It also formed a dam, forcing the aqueduct's flow over the sides and over him as well. The flow froze, and before Jinzan could even think of a counter, he was held fast, just as his trap had held Roshan. "I know you cannot talk in there," Roshan shouted through the ice to muffled ears. "So if you survive the fall, you can repay me with a pithy comment then."
Fall?
Jinzan had already thought to heat the ice with plain ether, inefficient but obvious, when he saw Roshan lift his sword. The demon thrust his blade into the stone side wall of the aqueduct, driving it deep. It was an astonishing show of brute force, swordsmithing or both. Cracks spread through the stone and ice alike, but not enough to free Jinzan from his captivity. Roshan scampered across the shattered section to the far side, where Jinzan lost sight of him. He recognized the strike by its sound, the same awful crack that had accompanied the first strike in the aqueduct. The sound of stone grinding against stone drowned out Jinzan's own desperate thoughts. The ice was melting, but not quickly enough for his liking. The whole section of aqueduct shifted and slid, finally falling free of the rest. Jinzan had seen Whitefield from the sky. He knew how far up he was, some 7 stories above the city streets. He knew he had little time. Jinzan drew, using the staff of Galen for all it was worth, pouring every bit of that ether into his shields. He knew a spell for light landings, but it would have availed him little with several tons of stone and ice dragging him along with them. The segment of aqueduct hit the ground with a force Jinzan had never expected to experience, let alone survive. It felt as if the world had rebounded. Jinzan tried to take stock of himself. He was buried beneath shattered ice and misplaced bits of stonework. The staff of Galen had survived, but he had fared poorly. He had several broken bones, from feet to skull. One arm was dangling loose, no longer responding to his commands. Jinzan dragged himself to his feet, sensing around him what he most desperately needed, ether. Much was freshly dead. The corpses in the homes that the aqueducts had collapsed atop were the splattered variety, not the reusable sort.
but they had ether, and it was plenty for his immediate needs. Jinzan looked up to the aqueduct as he replenished himself. Roshan Solaran looked down, watching him. Jinzan's eyes went wide as he saw the demon step off. Down, down the demon plummeted, landing with a crash just a few paces distant. He seemed unharmed, unconcerned, and still armed with a blade that Jinzan began envisioning buried into his own chest. Jinzan knew that he had still not overmastered Roshan Solaran, bitter though the thought was in his mind. His trap had proven insufficient. His attempts to destroy the demon's body were not enough. Loramar's techniques for attacking a victim's source had proven futile. His only option was escape.
"Like Loramar, I will return," Jinzan promised.
Jinzan had never attempted a transference spell silently before, but a serenity of mind gave him confidence.
Loramar failed twice against Roshan Solaran, and gathered himself once again. I shall do likewise.
The words and gestures of the spell played through his mind. A sphere of ether formed around him, blotting out his view of Roshan and the Kadrin city of Whitefield. Unlike every other time he had used the spell, his thoughts did not escape into the deep ether. Something struck the outside of the sphere, straining against it. Jinzan could feel the spell weakening, the ether draining off. When he finally managed his escape, Jinzan found his reserve of ether for the journey all but depleted. He reemerged immediately, only a dozen paces away. The rubble that had been at his feet collapsed to the ground around him, spilling him onto the street. He turned about and saw Roshan fall into the hole he had just left, poised in a kneeling position, blade stuck down below him.
"That madman attacked my transference spell and broke it? How is that even possible?"
"You worried me for a moment there when you reached the deep ether," Roshan said as he hopped from the rubble pit. "All well in the end, though. Looks like you lack the ether to try that little trick again." Roshan leapt for him.
"What are you?"
Jinzan called out in despair.
"Loramar's unbeatable foe," Roshan replied,
slamming Heaven's Cry down on Jinzan's shield.
"To follow his path was folly."
Another blow hammered at Jinzan. His mind was out of ideas. He kept his draw feeding into the shield.
"My source has no flaw. I became a demon in search of a way to protect myself from him."
Roshan pounded against the shield once more, seemingly intent on nothing more than to wear him down. For Jinzan, there was no hope of victory, no hope of escape.
"My first day of immortality was his doom."
Heaven's Cry sliced down again and cut cleanly through the staff of Galen, which Jinzan had thrust up at the last moment. There was no flash of light, nor explosion of uncontrolled ether let free. Not even a thunderous crack. It snapped like a dry sapling under the force of the demon's sword.
"All that craftsmanship, wasted," Roshan opined, granting Jinzan a moment's reprieve from his onslaught.
Jinzan felt something else, the demon's draw. Bereft of the staff's aid, the ether belonged to Roshan. Jinzan was no weakling himself, but he was no match, battered and broken of body and spirit, to draw against the demon.
"Better no one has it than you," Jinzan said.
He collapsed to his back, staring up at his executioner.
"Without it, your days are few."
"Fine, you can have the rest of your little unlife to explain that one, but make it quick. You've ruined my mood already," Roshan said, holding Heaven's Cry poised, ready to strike. He kicked the broken fragments of the staff of Galen free of Jinzan's unresisting hands.
"In Zoran, I saw true power one night. I knew at the time it had to be either you or Kyrus Hinderdale. I have taken your measure twice since then, and I know you have no power to match what I saw that night," Jinzan said.
"You promise me death by the hand of the one friend I know? I should leave you for the crows to pick at. But I grant you one final honor in Loramar's own footsteps. You will be consumed by Heaven's Cry." With that, Roshan impaled Jinzan through the chest.
I feel nothing. The wretched demon was not lying after all. I was already dead. The dead feel no pain.
Green vapors poured forth from heaven's cry, until nothing was left of the body. Starlight shone down from the heavens, illuminating the clearing ringed in ancient pines that the midday sun deigned not to visit. A pond in that clearing served as a gathering place. Immortals, demons, creatures whose lives spanned ages, stood, sat, or floated about its periphery, rapt at the images that played across the pond's shining surface. One of them knelt, palms pressed to the muddy banks of the water, guiding their view. Among the immortals, few had ever been to war, and those who had bore only faded memories, so old that they might have been from another lifetime, experienced by another being. They were scholars, philosophers, explorers of the world and worlds beyond. Warmongers seldom had the breadth of mind to also seek out something more than death. They all watched as one such reveled in his awesome fury. Roshan Solaran had confronted the wielder of the Staff of Galen, and the shaking in the ether had roused the immortal's attention. They watched the conflict as would theatrical patrons of a certain rude bent. They whispered to one another, gasped aloud. Some speculated on the outcome, but that pastime grew stale quickly once they realized that the necromancer had no tool with which to break the demon's shell. Without such, his stolen mastery was good for naught but culling the mortal herd. In the end, none of them were surprised to see him laid down.
"It is done," Iliardra announced
as she watched the last of Jinzan Fayer's body dissolve in the mist of heaven's cry. She allowed the spectators to linger a moment over the image before she dismissed it, and in that moment, Roshan looked up.
He gave a sheepish smile
and a little shrug, and she knew that it was meant for her. She gasped, realizing she had either been caught at her ease looking, or he had guessed her nature. The image disappeared.
"One threat is gone,"
Iliardra proclaimed, recovering her dignity.
"The wrong threat?"
Vijax shouted, ever the indiscreet one.
"Who cares if the mortals are swept aside once in a while? Necromancers are like forest fires among the source-weak cattle. It does them good in the long run to keep their numbers down."
"The staff, not the man,"
Iliardra clarified.
"Few are the threats to us, but that was among the scant number. It was the most unpredictable of threats as well, for any sturdy sorcerer would have become a deadly adversary by possessing it."
"What good is one fewer threat? Do so few remain to us? Always we have the dragons to concern ourselves with, and the worry of Zizix and the mad ideas he gets. He taught magic to assassins that sought after Roshan. What if they had implicated Zizix? Would Roshan have thought us culpable as well?"
"Roshan is a threat, of course. The dragons, they know their place, and value their scaly hides. Zizix prefers his bluster over violence, for all that he pretends otherwise,"
Iliardra replied.
"You still worry about that mortal sorcerer?" a new voice accused.
There were mutters of agreement.
"He is our greatest hope, and our greatest worry. God's willing, he kills Roshan before Roshan's mania consumes us all, and then he dies of age